Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A House proposal penalizes local governments for not cooperating with federal immigration officials. Advocates say immigrants trying to become citizens will live in fear of being deported.
You're privileged because you don't have to be afraid. You don't even know what that is, have any idea what it is, but my people know what it is.
Lawmakers are looking into a bill that changes work requirements for people who get public assistance. The sponsor says it helps kids, but it's raising concerns for Democrats.
And all the kids are in this bill is a Trojan horse.
And a day after the Senate rolled out a proposed $1 billion increase to public schools, the House comes up with its plan, and the state teachers union is not impressed. Plus, a report on the Bay County School District in the wake of Hurricane Michael. It's the third week of the annual lawmaking session, and you're listening to Capitol Report. A House proposal would fine local governments and law enforcement agencies for not cooperating with federal immigration enforcement. As Blaise Ganey reports, immigrant advocates say the bill is overbearing and it goes too far.
We must continue to discourage illegal immigration, for it undermines control of our borders, and even more, punishes hardworking people who play by the rules and who wait for their turns to come to the United States. Therefore, we must enforce our laws, but we will do so with justice and fairness.
Jacksonville Republican Representative Cord Byrd quoted Bill Clinton while closing on his bill that would require local governments and law enforcement agencies to cooperate with the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Kara Gross of American Civil Liberties Union argues Florida is already cooperating.
The misname HB 527, Rule of Law Adherence Act, isn't about following the current rule of law, because we are already doing that. It's about creating from whole cloth a new anti-immigrant law that goes beyond what is currently required by law and runs counter to the Constitution.
She believes it will lead to more immigrants being detained, even if they haven't committed a violent crime. Margarita Roma, a farm worker advocate and member of the Florida Civil Rights Hall of Fame, shared a story to go along with that argument.
I saw an entire car that the person that was driving didn't have a license. The people in the car were undocumented, but they all went, and they were all deported, and none of them were criminals.
Valrico Republican Representative Mike Beltran, who co-sponsors the proposal, says them being undocumented is the crime.
Illegal entry, that's a federal misdemeanor. 18 U.S.C. 1326, reentry after deportation, that's a federal felony, punishable by up to 20 years in prison. So there are two federal statutes kind of come to mind to me just sitting here that are that you would have probable cause if you came across somebody, or very close to probable cause, simply coming across somebody who's not a United States citizen and doesn't have the appropriate documentation.
But St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Ben Diamond questioned exactly what it would take to find a probable cause. Byrd answered.
The bill does not target people based on their appearance, and no one will be asked to provide their papers. Put simply, the only people that the law applies to are people who are in custody for committing a criminal violation against the laws of the state of Florida, where a local or state law enforcement agency already found probable cause for that person to be detained.
He says he's heard the bill called racist and anti-immigrant, but says that's both surprising and offensive.
I've helped immigrants study to become United States citizens who did it the right way, hardworking people who wanted to play by the rules and who came to this country because we have a rule of law. And also it offends me in some respect because as a lawyer, I've represented immigrants. I've represented them in courts of law to defend the rule of law and their rights as legal immigrants in this country.
But Roma, an advocate for immigrants, says it's not that easy for everyone.
We have people that are still here that have been here for 30 years waiting. And people say, oh, well, why don't you stand in line? Well, it's not that easy. It isn't that easy. But if you have $1 million, maybe you can.
Roma says when her local sheriff signed the 287G delegation from ICE, agreeing to work with and receive authority for immigration enforcement, it affected her.
It affected me because I knew the pain and the misunderstanding and the fear that everyone was going to have. And, you know, you're privileged because you don't have to be afraid. You don't even know what that is, have any idea what it is. But my people know what it is.
But Beltran says locals working with ICE is just a way to avoid what he says is disruptive.
This is really an alternative to having ICE go to work sites, go to communities and try to find undocumented folks. And that would be very disruptive. That would have a lot of problems.
Meanwhile, Pensacola Republican Representative Mike Hill is worried about the fiscal impact on local governments.
My only concern I have with the bill has to do with the enforcement section where if an agency or entity is not complying, if they're subject to a fine of $1,000 to up to $5,000 each day. My only concern with that is any agency or entity, the only funding they receive is from taxpayers. So if some agency or entity is being obstinate and that fine grows to a very large number and they have to pay it, eventually they're going to go to the taxpayers to get that money back.
But those who cooperate also see a large fiscal impact, according to Tomas Kennedy, a political director with the Florida Immigrant Coalition.
Under a period of 10 months, Miami-Dade actually spent between $13 to $14 million honoring this detainer request.
Lawmakers in the committee passed the bill on a 10-3 vote, with Democrats voting all against. A companion bill in the Senate is in its last committee stop before making it to the floor. I'm Blaze Ganey.
A proposal moving through the Florida House would make changes to the work requirements for people who receive public assistance. The bill's Republican sponsor says the goal is to ensure children aren't punished for their parents' actions. But Democrats say the devil is in the details. Regan McCarthy explains.
Land O'Lakes Republican Representative Ardian Zika is sponsoring the bill. He says he understands what it's like to grow up in a family that has fallen on hard times.
I'm someone that came from nothing.
Right.
And when I was made aware of the current law, first came to my thought was the children. Why are the children being penalized? Because the parent may not be working or fully complying with the state requirements to work.
As you said, you came from nothing, but single divorced mom raising 8 kids off government subsidies. Food stamps, welfare, government cheese, free lunch, reduced lunch, summer jobs, after school jobs. You're looking at it. I remember the days when the DCF worker would come around and we couldn't have a male figure in the house. Mom would dress us up for the show as they come through to inspect us. And we had nothing. We had nothing next to nothing.
That's St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Wingay Newton. He says Zika's intentions don't ring true.
It's really tough to see that you come in and you use the kids as an example. And all the kids are in this bill is a Trojan horse.
Zika's bill increases penalties and sanctions for people who get temporary cash assistance but fail to meet certain work requirements. Kids can still get cash assistance even if their parents can't, but the bill limits that to only the first year of the sanction period. During a hearing before the House Children, Families, and Seniors Subcommittee, Boca Raton Democratic Representative Tina Polsky asked Zika for clarification on how that would work.
So you mentioned that the children will not be penalized, meaning their assistance will continue throughout this period. But don't the parents hold these EBT cards in their hands? So if they are not, if they're abusing the system, how are the children going to get the food or whatever they need if the parents are the ones who are holding the money? Mm-hmm.
Recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding and what I was told the way the process would work, because I needed to personally have a clear understanding, there's a third-party process that the funds would flow directly to the kids.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand how a child purchases food or...
Zika promised to get more details to Polsky as the bill moves forward. According to the staff analysis, Zika's bill also directs the Agency for Healthcare Administration to ask the federal government for permission to require Medicaid recipients to meet the same kind of work requirements that those receiving cash assistance must meet. But Zika says those changes come with more help for families looking for jobs and an exemption for people who simply cannot meet the requirements.
The purpose of the bill is to ensure that individual Floridians can go from welfare to work, from work to wages, from wages to wealth, and from wealth to winning.
The bill passed the Children, Families, and Seniors Subcommittee on a 10-5 vote. A similar bill by Senator Dennis Baxley has not yet been heard. But another House measure focusing solely on the Medicaid work requirement is moving forward. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a day after expressing cautious optimism about the Senate's education spending plan, the state's largest teachers union is giving side eye to the House.
We are asking, and in fact we're demanding, that our House members and leaders take a look at the Senate for leadership.
Hurricane Michael continues to send shockwaves through the panhandle. Hard hit Bay County is no exception.
Two huge problems in our area right now. It's housing and the mental capacity of all of us to deal with what we're facing.
And audience members get kicked out of a House committee ahead of a vote on an abortion bill.
Excuse me, ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the committee room.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Lynn Hatter. The Florida House of Representatives has rolled out its proposed K-12 education budget for the coming fiscal year. Ryan Daly spoke with Florida Education Association President Frederick Ingram. He says the House should follow the Senate's lead with respect to a funding proposal.
On Tuesday, the Florida Senate proposed a $1.1 billion increase to the main funding mechanism for public schools. That would allow for a $350 or 5% increase in per-student spending over the current year. The House, however, appears to be taking a more frugal stance with its proposed education budget. Here's House Pre-K-12 Appropriations Subcommittee Chair Chris Latvala with some of the numbers.
The FEFP increases the total funds per student by $167.79 for a total funds per student of $7,596.58, which is a 2.26% increase over the current year.
Frederick Ingram, president of statewide teachers union, the Florida Education Association, says the House budget proposal doesn't go far enough. Speaking with Frederick Ingram, president of the Florida Education Association, wanted to get your thoughts on the Florida House budget that was released this morning. Of course, we had the Senate's proposed budget that came out yesterday. The House budget, looking at it, it would fund the FEFP at $21.6 billion, and that is a total increase of $579.3 million over the current year, which represents just north of $167 increase per student spending. What do you think about what the House is proposing and what that would do for Florida public schools?
Well, thank you for having me. And we don't believe that the House goes far enough in terms of increased funding and or spending from the state. And we do that in comparison to what the governor has proposed and also what the Senate has proposed. And so the Senate took a bold step forward in trying to set us on a path forward that will actually create more programming for our students. Will help teachers to deal with all of the resources that they need to help our students' success. And so we are asking, and in fact, we're demanding that our House members and leaders take a look at the Senate for leadership, and hopefully they will follow their lead. We know that this is a proposed budget, but we hope after some talks that they will take Senate President Galvano's lead and bring us much, much closer to where our schools ought to be. And we know with either of these increases, Florida still falls short in terms of teacher pay. We are still in the bottom quartile for the country. And per pupil spending, again, we are still in the bottom 10% of all 50 states.
For our listeners who, you know, hear some of these terms in education, like per student spending, you know, as it relates to a budget, I was wondering if you could just kind of talk about the importance of per student spending. I know that's one of the things that, you know, advocates for public education key in on every year in this budget is what is it per student?
Sure. Well, I'll just give you a comparison analysis. Our current spending is $7,429 on every student that comes into our public schools. Again, that's pre-K through 12th grade. That is every school district is allocated a dollar amount. That dollar amount again is $7,429, and that is added up for the amount of students that you have per school. And so those allocations help to fund everything that school needs: programming, resources, allocations for teachers, for support professionals, for staffing needs like custodians, and anything else that a principal or a leadership team would actually need for a particular school. So just to do the comparison with a state like Massachusetts, where they fund somewhere between $15,000 and $16,000 per student, it gives you an analysis of where we are in terms of funding per pupil, per student. And so that falls about $8,000 short from just a very, very small, much smaller state in terms of demographics and population.
Wanted to quickly run something by you from the Senate budget. In the committee hearing yesterday where the Senate discussed their proposed budget, they said there would be included in that $600 million in flexible funding, which they pointed out can be used for teacher pay increases. Whether it will be, obviously, that's up to the school districts, I'm sure. But when it comes to that that flexible funding, would you consider that a step forward, as you know, we face a teacher shortage in the state and teachers all around the state are calling for pay raises?
Absolutely. Again, it is not a panacea with this amount of money, but it is definitely showing a sign to teachers that lawmakers are at least listening and trying to solve the problem of the teacher shortage. And just to be clear, the teacher shortage that we face in Florida is unlike anything that anyone else is seeing in the nation. Next year, the Department of Education is projecting in upwards of 10,000 classrooms not having a certified teacher. So this is paramount. And we need the House to make sure that they're sending a clear sign to not only those college graduates, but people who would come to our state to teach and people who we're trying to retain in this state to teach, that we value their profession, that we value education, and that our lawmakers are going to continue to fully fund public education.
Talking with Florida Education Association President Frederick Ingram. Mr. Ingram, thank you so much for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was WFSU public media reporter Ryan Daly speaking with Florida Education Association President Frederick Ingram. And here's Gina Jordan with a look at what's going on tomorrow at the state capitol.
Here's a look at what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. In the House, a committee will consider a proposal to abolish the Constitution Revision Commission. The commission meets every 20 years. Its most recent meeting resulted in 7 proposed amendments on last November's ballot. Most of them contained multiple unrelated subjects, raising the ire of lawmakers. The Education Committee will consider expanding access to school guardians by allowing private schools and charter schools to employ guardians. The bill also allows more options for guardian training. A tort reform bill would establish a uniform method for determining damages for a plaintiff. The amount the plaintiff recoups for medical treatment would be based on the accurate value of the services provided, rather than a potentially inflated amount billed by the medical provider. And contracts between health insurers and providers may have to be more transparent when it comes to health care pricing. In the Senate, the full chamber is scheduled to hold a floor session. It could vote on a bill that would carry out a constitutional amendment that bans vaping and the use of electronic cigarettes in indoor workplaces. The Senate will also take up bills related to the regulation of residential vegetable gardens and an effort to exempt from public disclosure any photographs, video, and audio recordings that depict the killing of a victim of mass violence. That's some of what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
It's been months since Hurricane Michael struck the panhandle, carving a swath of damage from the Gulf to the Georgia state line. Recovery is expected to take years, even a decade or more, and schools are feeling the pressure. Bay County Superintendent Bill Husfeldt recently spoke before the State Board of Education, outlining some of the problems that have cropped up in the wake of the storm.
Two huge problems in our area right now. It's housing and the mental capacity of all of us to deal with what we're facing.
What Bay County Superintendent Bill Husfeldt and others are facing is a cleanup process that will take years, businesses and livelihoods destroyed, and children and families dealing with the trauma and aftermath of Hurricane Michael.
Loss of normal things, Little League, Junior Achievement, Elevate Bay, mentoring. We've lost half of our mentors that we had a program trying to get 1,000 mentors by the end of this year, and we were at about 600. We've lost almost 300 of those. Little League, you think, well, why is the superintendent of education of Bay District Schools standing up talking about Little League? Those are things that parents are upset about and concerned with their children because we don't have those things right now.
Then there's the disillusionment with the slowness of progress. Debris piles remain high, and in some places in the panhandle, it looks as if the storm was yesterday instead of 5 months ago. In the aftermath of natural disasters, schools are often called upon to get back up and running first to try and return some normalcy to families. But Bay County's schools were closed for nearly 2 months. Most sustained damage from the storm. Three have closed, and the district has lost more than 4,000 kids. It's trying to figure out where another 481 have gone.
Because there's stories out there about when you don't look for kids, bad things can happen, and so we're trying to track down all the students. We don't know where they're at.
More than 70% of the apartments in Panama City are uninhabitable. Husfeldt says before the storm, there were 738 homeless students. Now there are more than 4,800, and that takes a toll.
We have a lot higher now. I think it's probably closer to 700, but when I was researching this, community of care referrals, that would be to mental health agencies in our area where we refer students for help. We've had 70 Baker Acts since we have reopened November 5th, 35 since February 25th, 62 since Christmas break.
He reads a letter from a teacher about having to Baker Act a six-year-old.
When he escalates, he's completely out of control emotionally and physically. We call the MRT, which is the mental response team that we've started in our district, as he made his second threat of self-harm since we received him. Again, he's 6 years old. When the counselor arrived, the life management center that we used to send them to was full and not taking patients. They were told that they could take him to Gulf Coast Emergency Room, and they would probably take him. Otherwise, he'd have to be taken to Tallahassee or Pensacola.
Husfeldt says that's happening across the district. Teachers are on the front lines, and while they're dealing with the trauma of their students, they're working through their own problems, lack of housing, fights with insurance companies, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. But he notes kids are resilient, and he shared a story about an interaction U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos had with a child during her visit to a Bay County elementary school.
She asked, how many of you, what do you think about the hurricane? And one little boy, I'll never forget, raised his hand. He says, I'm glad about the hurricane. And we all look like this. He says, why? I says, because I made a bunch of new friends.
Finally tonight, a bill requiring minors to get a parent's consent for abortions passed a House committee this week. Gina Jordan reports while the debate was mostly civil, some audience members had to be escorted out.
Florida law says parents have to be notified when their daughters seek abortions. This bill says parents would have to give their permission. The House Health Quality Subcommittee heard from a string of women who've had abortions, but who have differing opinions about the bill. Barbara Mayall supports it.
I had an abortion, and I'm over 65 years old, and it haunts me every day.
But Kristen Erickson opposes the bill. She says it assumes that all children have good relationships with their parents.
When I was 15, I had been evicted 3 times, and my mom was severely addicted to drugs. When I found out I was pregnant, I sought the waiver for parental consent and was able to receive an abortion. And I'm now a fourth-year PhD student at Florida State. I would not be here if this bill went through.
The proposal includes exemptions for minors with health emergencies and who already have children. Minors could also ask a judge to waive the parental consent requirement. Weston Democratic Representative Richard Stark said he opposes the bill, even though he's against abortion.
It's just that some of us have a different idea of, you know, what the rights are for other people.
Neptune Beach Republican Cord Byrd said the debate is worthy because minors need permission for just about everything.
When I heard the people in opposition, not one person said why this procedure, which is a medical procedure performed by a medical doctor, is any different than any other medical procedure performed in the state of Florida by a physician on a minor that requires parental consent.
As Mount Dora Republican Jennifer Sullivan tried to explain why she supports the bill, committee chairwoman Colleen Burton had to jump in when audience members started interrupting.
The majority of opposition we've heard today is from those who stand to financially benefit from these children moving forward with this procedure. Now, if parent...
Excuse me, ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the committee room. Excuse me, Sergeant, please remove the woman who's speaking from our room, from the committee room.
The woman protesting away from the microphones was Barbara Devane, a lobbyist for the Florida National Organization for Women, which opposes the bill. She left, then it happened again.
Who is to be their advocate?
Ma'am. Excuse me, Representative, I hate to interrupt you again. Ladies and gentlemen, if you insist on speaking up during our members' debate, you'll be asked to leave. Ma'am, you need to leave the committee room, please.
Santa Fe College student Heather Ann Irons yelled from the audience that she wasn't an abortion provider and had nothing to gain financially from opposing the bill. It passed the committee 10-4. A Senate version of the measure has not been heard in committees. I'm Gina Jordan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back tomorrow. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag.